What's happening across Connecticut? Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600.
And our chat with Governor Lamont is sponsored by the Fairfield Law Office of Eliefson and Tenor. Governor Lamont, I don't know if you know this, but this is our last Friday together for 2020 because the next two Fridays will be holidays. So we have no shows. So I guess cheers to our last interview in 2020 before we go into a new year. How are you?
Liz in the Morning. Good morning. What, are you hacking off the next two Fridays? Come on, let's
I know, right? They're telling me I should take a holiday and be with my kid. I don't know what they're thinking, but yeah, I'm going to take a little breather just for the two Fridays. Don't worry, I'll still be here on the eaves, but that gets you off the hook of coming on, so there you go.
All right. Let's get it in today then.
Yeah, exactly. So first and foremost, you made an announcement yesterday during your press conference that kind of had my eyebrows going up a little bit. The state receiving fewer doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine. My understanding is this was like a miscommunication problem between Pfizer and Operation Warp Speed. What happened?
Pfizer says they've got the vaccines by the millions in the warehouse ready to go. That Warp Speed was not very directive in terms of making the orders for delivery. So you're right. A lot of states, including Connecticut, got a partial shipment of Pfizer. So that shortchanged us a little bit. But the Moderna came in day before yesterday. So that made up for a lot of the shortfall. So we're vaccinating more this week than last week, but there was a bit of a shortfall from Pfizer. I don't think it's permanent. It's not a supply chain thing. It was just a bureaucratic snafu.
Okay, so we should still get, like, by the end of our 6 weeks, we were hoping to get somewhere around 300,000 doses. We're still on track for that, even though this is kind of a setback.
We're still on track for that. I think we're going to have all of the first-tier health officials, doctors, nurses, nursing homes, all with their second vaccine by the end of January. That was our goal.
Now, let me understand this. So we already have the Moderna vaccine here, even though the FDA hasn't approved it?
Let's see. Moderna is scheduled for delivery first thing next week. I think that's what it is.
Okay. Okay. So we're expected to get that next week. Okay. What happened, Governor, with and maybe this is because of the shortage, but it seems like, you know, we knew that we were going to roll out the vaccine this week, which we did. But, like, there are hospitals in our state that still don't have it. So, like, New Vance Health, Danbury Hospital, Norwalk Hospital, like, they still don't even have the vaccine. Like, why did some hospitals get it right away and others just still haven't? They don't know at this point. Like, I think Mayor Harry Rilling said maybe in the next few days, maybe in a week or two. And I thought, well, why? That's such a weird disconnect.
So the CDC made the direction, Operation Warp Speed made the direction on what hospitals would receive the vaccine when. So we got our overall number of doses, 32,000, and they didn't go to every hospital equally. They went to first-tier hospitals. Today, we're one of the very first states in the country, first four states, to start vaccinating folks at nursing homes. So really happy about that. But again, Melissa, not every nursing home got the vaccine. It's just the first five. And that was selected by Operation Warp Speed.
So that's something that's out of your control. I was going to say, how did we decide? Like, Hartford, it seemed like, immediately got the vaccine. Yale the next day. But like I said, you know, like Norwalk and Danbury, those were some of the hottest spots we saw in the pandemic, you know, with some of the highest cases, you know, throughout. And I was curious, like, why haven't those hospitals gotten them? Like, why weren't they made a priority? But that, it sounds like, is out of your control.
And within a week, everybody catches up. And I think we'll be getting our allocated share overall of vaccines. And that's what's particularly important to me.
Talking to Governor Ned Lamont this morning. And, you know, another thing, Governor, that I just wanted to clarify, and I'm not sure if this is something that's still in the works, but I did want to address sort of the next phase of the rollout. So we know healthcare workers, nursing homes, totally understand. First priority, absolutely. But then, like, I look at this next phase, the underlying condition and the 65 plus. Now, like in our household, you can imagine my father's 65 and has underlying conditions. So he's antsy. He is very excited to get in line for Moderna specifically. I don't know why, but he, you know, has been talking about it. And he said, you know, Melissa, when am I getting it? I said, at this point, you're probably getting it between February and May, it sounds like is the timeline. And I think his reaction, very much like so many others in his age category, are like, well, that's a four-month span, and so much can happen there. Are we narrowing down a little bit closer to, like, giving people a real timeline of when they could get the vaccine, how they can get in line for a vaccine? Because a four-month span, that is a long time. Like, at this point, I may not get the vaccine till September because of my age group, which, again, like, it's just a long span.
No, it's the phase 1B. It's the group after those first healthcare responders. The CDC is handing down, I think it's today, a little more specificity on how to prioritize within the phase 1B.
Okay.
But tell your dad, 65 and over, especially with some comorbidities or pre-existing, they're at the top of that list. And we start vaccinating that group, I'm in that group, by the end of January. So a little more than a month,
okay,
they'll get their first vaccine. We can't get, it's about a million people in that group.
Exactly.
So it's going to take a month or two before we can really get that to everybody. But that's just a function of how many vaccines we can get and when.
Mm-hmm.
We got Pfizer, we got Moderna. Let's wait and see on AstraZeneca. If we get a third supplier, we could accelerate things.
Right.
We just don't know about that yet.
And we are back with Governor Ned Lamont this morning. Now, Governor Lamont, you actually kind of just talked a little bit about it. You are seeing the first nursing home residents get vaccinated today, and you're actually going to be going to one of those facilities at 10 o'clock this morning. What can we expect with nursing home residents in quick vaccinations? I know, unfortunately, we read this morning that once again our deaths from COVID are up again in nursing homes. And we know that between nursing homes, assisted living facilities, that was about 70% of our state's virus deaths. So, what is sort of the outlook at this point with nursing homes and people who are living there and staff working there?
So it's a big priority. We told CDC it's a big priority. That's why they made Connecticut a priority in getting the vaccines to nursing homes, for which I'm very appreciative. You're right. During the first round, when we got hit hard in the spring, folks in nursing homes represented about 70% of the fatalities. We're doing a little better now. Everything is relative, by the way, but a little better. It's about 50% of the fatalities now, and the complications, Melissa. So if I get people vaccinated in the nursing home, there's lower fatalities and there are fewer people going to the hospitals. And that creates additional capacity for other people in the hospitals. So that's why it was very important to make this a priority.
Mm-hmm. Does it seem like that most residents have said they want to get vaccinated?
I think so. Look, let's face it. A month or so ago, whoa, slow down, Operation Warp Speed. I'm not sure I want to be there first. We're finding as more and more nurses and doctors and people get vaccinated, you see they're not really those side effects. I think a lot of that hesitancy will go away, but I'm going to the nursing home in the West Hartford in about an hour. I'll report back to you.
I appreciate it. Talking to Governor Lamont this morning. How, as a state, are we looking? I know you're keeping a pretty close eye on how people are faring with the vaccine. And I know about a week ago, we still weren't exactly at the 70% or more of people wanting to get the vaccine. Some people on the fence, like they're not really sure yet, but we weren't quite at the number we want to be at for everyone to actually be immune to this thing because we don't have enough people who want to get vaccinated. Has that changed at all? Have we seen any progress there?
I can tell you, for the next 3 months, demand will outstrip supply. There are many more people who want to get vaccinated, like your dad, sooner rather than later. So we don't have to, we're doing everything we can to convince the broader population. When it's your turn, please step up and get vaccinated. Overall, look, the state, we got hit, as did everybody else in the country, especially in our region, after Thanksgiving. Those numbers showed up for a couple of weeks. Now we're flattening a little bit, and we'll see whether that's a trend. But we got holidays coming up. We got Christmas. We got Hanukkah. So we got to watch out that we don't have another flare up with these big social gatherings. You think it's family? You think I can relax? I know all these people. Look what happened at Thanksgiving. We don't want that to happen again.
No, we don't. And it's interesting you bring that up, Governor, because earlier in the show I was comparing what New York City has done in comparison to what you have done with Connecticut with indoor dining. You know, I was reminding folks that, look, you know, we've been pretty much in line with New York and New Jersey throughout the pandemic, but I give you credit because you have not shut down indoor dining, because let's face it, that's not where the outbreaks are happening. I don't believe, you know, the data has shown us it's private gatherings, and unfortunately it has been in our nursing and assisted living facilities. So with that being said, I do know that you're kind of getting some pushback from breweries, bartenders. You know, we are going into 2021, and they have now gone 10 months without checking in to work and actually getting a paycheck, at least from their jobs. What are there any talks going on right now about how to maybe creatively get them back into jobs or figure out ways to implement their work again so that they don't go, you know, into 2021 basically feeling like, you know, we're done here. You know, I do agree with not having bars open because you're scared about the alcohol consumption and people making bad decisions. But in the meantime, we've got all these workers who have just been kind of sitting here going, well, like, now what?
Yeah, you had a couple of things there. First of all, look, Massachusetts, New York, they've got some things open, some things closed. The schools open, then they close. Now they're opening partially again. We've tried to do everything, A, on a statewide basis. We've tried to be more consistent. So really since June 20th, we really haven't changed our protocols very much. Although for restaurants, it is 50%, and you got to stop eating and drinking sometime after 9:30. So that's important. In terms of other big changes, I've got to see the numbers go down a little bit. I think you're going to find, Melissa, that starting about now with the snowstorm through the end of this calendar year, a lot of things are going to slow down just because that's what happens post-Christmas. And I think people will stay closer to home. Hopefully that means our curve keeps bending. But in the meantime, we got to help people out. So David Lehman, our commissioner, Economic Development, sent out 10,000 checks to small businesses right now as we speak, $5,000 each. We're also having a program of $25 million for slightly bigger companies. And frankly, those include breweries and restaurants and even the bars, just to help them bridge to the relief funds that we get from the feds. It looks like Washington is finally going to get something passed as early as today, and I hope that that means that we'll be able to get short-term loans, forgivable loans, and other support for restaurants and breweries and others that have been so hard hit over the last 6 months.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We are hoping for that as well. Well, Governor Lamont, thank you so much for your time this morning, and we're going to talk again in the new year. I hope you and your family have a very Merry Christmas.
Hey, to you and all your listeners, right back at you. Be cautious. I'd like to think this is the last big holiday where we got to be extra cautious. I do believe that we're turning the corner on this thing, and I'm looking forward to 2021. Mm-hmm. Boy, am I looking forward to it. Take care, everybody.
Sure.
Bye,
are.
Melissa.
Thanks, Governor Lamont. Yeah, I'm sure you are.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Senator Blumenthal, thank you so much. I know I kind of have you all over the place in the last couple of days, but thank you for making the time. How are you?
Well, thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks for all your great work, and hope you are having a great holiday and all of your listeners as well.
Thank you.
After the snowstorm.
Yes, thank you. We really appreciate that. First of all, if you don't mind just kind of giving us a little bit of a status update, what is the latest on the stimulus package? We know that today was sort of the cutoff to avoid a government shutdown. If we don't have a decision, what's going on?
We're working toward midnight tonight. It's a deadline, but it could be extended by what is called a continuing resolution, which is done actually, unfortunately, with some frequency to extend by just a few days the deadline that we have for completing a budget. At the same time, we're working on a pandemic rescue or relief package to be combined with that budget legislation. And, of course, the deadline for the budget is this evening. There is no firm deadline for the pandemic rescue package, but I really think we cannot leave town without passing it because I see folks in Connecticut who are really hurting.
Yes.
I went to the food lines at Rentschler before Thanksgiving. I've been to those food banks around the state. families struggling to put food on the table, small businesses trying to keep their doors open. So we are working on both those measures, and I expect it will be done within the next couple of days, if not today.
Okay, so we, A, are going to avoid a government shutdown, and B, we will hopefully, fingers crossed, actually have a stimulus package that would be approved by early next week. Is that what I'm hearing?
Melissa, I'm on my way right now. As a matter of fact, I just stepped out of a meeting to finalize the pandemic rescue package. We're literally on the 5-yard line, and goal to go. It could be today. It could be in the next couple of days. Major aid to small businesses, mm-hmm. and extension of the PPP, Paycheck Protection Program, education money, distribution of vaccine money, as well as stimulus payment to families, much like the $1,200 that we did the last time around, because we know people are struggling. And then aid to our hospitals and healthcare facilities, again, to distribute the vaccine, apply more testing. So I'm hopeful we'll do it literally in the next day or so, if not today, and then the budget as well.
Okay. All right. Now, a couple of other things that I have here on my list. First of all, this was actually in one of our top stories in our newscast. Connecticut is joining many other states in an antitrust lawsuit against Google. I know you and I have talked about this, the control over kind of like a monopoly with search engines, and we saw this with Facebook. We've seen it with many other of these major companies. But on top of that, we also have cyber attacks that are still going on here in our country. And I know you are one of the, I would say, loudest voices about privacy, protecting us with the online world. Where are we at, and what are you kind of voicing at this point?
A couple of developments that are really important. You just cited a number of them. First of all, the lawsuit against Google is very, very important, frankly, long overdue by both state and federal authorities. For too long, we've tolerated the anti-competitive conduct of Facebook and Google. They've acquired their competitors and, in effect, buried them or bought them instead of competing with them. And that has meant less innovation and choices for consumers. So the lawsuit against Google is important, but very distinguishable is the cyber attack on our country that has been uncovered in recent days. I've been to a couple of classified briefings. I'm precluded from telling you what I learned in those briefings. Let me just say, I was stunned, startled, and frightened, because the depth and breadth of these attacks is simply stunning. And it is a major, massive failure in our cyber defenses. The new system, which unfortunately was named Einstein, apparently failed to defend against these attacks. In fact, the government learned of them only after it was notified by an outside private contractor, according to press reports. So we have to clean up that mess, uncover all of the invasive techniques that they've used, what they've infected, and then take action proportionately to show them that we simply won't tolerate this kind of attack. And the strongest indications are that Russia is behind them, just as it was the NotPetya attack in 2017. This probably is the most massive cyber attack in the nation's history, and we need to defend forward, that is, deter this kind of crime, and make our adversaries pay a price.
Talking this morning to Senator Richard Blumenthal, a lot of big topics, of course, talking about cybersecurity. We're talking about the relief package, also avoiding a government shutdown later today. But something else that's on your plate, Senator, is a roundtable discussion on the opioid crisis. What are you hoping to tackle with that coming up today?
Well, I hope that we will have today a very, very informative roundtable with Attorney General William Tong. You know, the pandemic has accelerated and amplified a lot of the challenges in our society, domestic violence and opioid addiction and substance abuse. People feel stressed and anxious and are turning to more and more, apparently, to opioids. And we want to explore what is happening with the remedies, what can be done about it, how the combination of our criminal justice system and our other institutions can help combat it and provide the remedies that are needed for people to break these addictions, and also what the federal government can do to provide funding for them. So this roundtable is meant to hear from recovering addicts, from law enforcement, from other government officials, and from families who've lost loved ones, because the rates of death as a result of drug overdose have been rising, and that is just tragic.
Mm-hmm. No, it absolutely is. I'm glad that we're going to keep on this, because that's so true. The opioid crisis, I feel like, was one of our biggest problems, and then the pandemic hit, and I worry things like that go to the back burner, but I'm glad you're going to be discussing it, a roundtable discussion today. And, Senator, thank you so much again for coming on and giving us your time, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks so much, Melissa. Have a great week. Talk to you next Thursday.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What's happening in Hartford and how it affects you? Senate Republican leader Kevin Kelly joins Melissa in the morning now on WICC 600.
Hey, Senator Kelly, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Melissa. Thank you.
So it's crazy to me to think that this is the last time you and I will chat on the air for the year 2020. So I think it's pretty fitting that we kind of look back on this year. What were some of the, I guess, highs and lows? We know, obviously, COVID, but, like, the highs and lows that our Connecticut residents, like, what we went through and sort of what are we projecting for 2021? Where do you want to start with this one?
Well, Melissa, you know, putting 2020 in the rearview mirror, I don't think there's many people who will agree that they're going to like to see that happen.
True.
But we can't do that without thanking the heroic efforts of our nurses, our LPNs, doctors, healthcare workers who really did outstanding work and at times put their own lives at risk to live beyond themselves and to help others. We wouldn't be able to have weathered the storm without them, without first responders, our teachers who go in to the classrooms for our children. And so there's so many heroes. Yourself, I mean, you're a COVID survivor, and WICC has been actively engaged, and the listeners also, at adhering to many of the new rules, the social distancing, wearing masks, so that we can get past this pandemic. We also like to remember those who we lost. So many, too many of the greatest generation. I mean, folks who could beat the Japanese at Pearl Harbor and survive that awful day, but then succumb to this virus. So there's some silver linings there that we have great neighbors and people in Connecticut that are willing to do great things for others, but it also came at a cost. So those are the things that I think when we look back, you know, we'll be glad to close this chapter. But I think 2021 is around the corner, and one of the big things is, you know, Yankee ingenuity, the skills of Connecticut. You know, Pfizer came up with a vaccine, and there's a lot of hope and optimism that we can round the corner now, literally and figuratively, and start to get back on track. But one thing's for sure, we need to make sure that Connecticut becomes more affordable for our families here. It's just way too expensive. The cost of government, the cost of health care, and that's one of the big legislative initiatives I'd like to see, is that we bring down the cost of not only premiums, but the cost of health care, and then also end the governor's, social isolation of our seniors, both in the community and in nursing homes. That's an issue that we need to focus on and end.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, what about bringing you guys back to the table? I know that was kind of a big issue. I could understand in the beginning of the pandemic where, you know, we just had to start making decisions. We didn't want to debate every little thing. So, okay, the governor is calling executive orders left and right, basically. But now, you know, we're 9-10 months into this pandemic, and just because we flipped the calendar to January doesn't mean it's gone. So, you know, are there talks about when basically you guys, when our senators are going to actually be back at the table discussing these things, or is the governor going to continue just making the calls?
Well, when the legislature granted the executive power to the governor, there were promises made to keep us at the table. You know, this government that we have, American democracy, is not set up for one-person rule. There should be the legislature. We're three equal, co-equal branches of government, so the people's voice should have always been at the table. Now, under the Constitution, January 6th, we'll have a brand-new legislative session. And, you know, we'll try to get back at it, but you do have, you know, COVID restrictions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that said, you know, the governor really, when he moves forward, should be moving forward in unison with the legislative leaders. And that hasn't happened and really needs to.
Talking this morning with Senator Kevin Kelly, and as you talk about the session, Mr. Kelly, what are some of the hot-button topics, would you say, at this point? You know, obviously there are so many things that we're tackling, health insurance, infrastructure needs, vaccinations. I mean, the list goes on and on, as you know. But what in particular would you say are like the hot-button topics that you guys want to tackle right out of the gate when you get back into session?
Well, see, Melissa, that's what's kind of interesting is that the, you know, the majority of the legislature gave their power to the governor, but then they want to go and start talking about, as you said, the list goes on and on about all these side issues. And if they wanted to deal with all these issues, they should have retained the power to set an agenda and move them forward. The hot button issues that I think are present for middle class families is first and foremost, and what we should only be dealing with is our state budget, because it's in a huge deficit because of what was done to our economy. Looking at how to deal with COVID and to keep our citizens safe and to get our economy back on track, which includes this affordability issue, is mm-hmm. that Connecticut families are struggling financially.
Yes.
As part of that, it's not only the taxation and cost of the state government, but it's looking at things like the affordability of health care, the affordability of our utilities, so that we can bring relief during this stressful time to middle-class families. That's the only thing we should be focused on. The list isn't, you know, long and long and goes on and on. There's only four or five issues that really we should be looking at in this interim until we can get the legislature back and the authority back to move an agenda on behalf of middle-class Connecticut.
Really quickly, Senator, before I let you go, I noticed yesterday that the Lamont administration announced financial relief of the total of $60 million allocated to our towns and cities. And this, of course, is coming from the Coronavirus Relief Fund. But I noticed that this is really more for, like, COVID vaccinations, and, you know, infrastructure needs, things like that. But I didn't see a lot for our struggling businesses and restaurants. Do you know if we're allocating number from our funds? Because we're waiting on the funds at the feds at this point for a relief package that still hasn't been approved.
Well, there's a little bit of both there, Melissa. There is some money, I believe, that is going to, and I've heard, is going to be allocated to small businesses, and in
okay.
particular restaurants, that the governor is looking at that issue. But there is a whole host of hope that the majority Democrats have, that we're waiting to look at how our budget is until maybe March or April to see what we get from Washington. And that really does a disservice here in Connecticut, because the longer we wait, we already know that in the current fiscal year we have a $1 billion shortfall. If we had started working on this in October, you'd have 6, 8, 10 months in a budget to deal with it. When you wait until April, you only have, you know, May and June to deal with it. So if we don't get what we're looking for from Washington, then the cuts are going to be deeper and wider than they may have been done in, you know, September, October, causing more harm to people who rely on the states and core services of the state. So it's really not taking responsibility, sitting down, putting pencil to paper like families do. This is what happens in a family when you fall behind. You don't keep doing what you're doing. You try to adapt and make the adjustments along the way so you don't fall behind.
Right.
And I just don't think that's the right thing to be doing. It kind of reminds me of Clark Griswold in, you know, everybody's watching Christmas Vacation. He wanted that Christmas bonus for a pool and was wanting and wanting, but what did he end up with? He got the Jelly of the Month Club, and I just hope that, you know, the majority's desire to wait for Washington doesn't, you know, I hope the Biden administration doesn't send us a Jelly of the Month Club.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Well, Senator Kelly, thank you so much for your extra time this morning. We appreciate it, and have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Thank you.